This is Iowa Public Radio's weekly legislative podcast, Under the Golden Dome. I'm John Pimble. Some of the events in the news may change after this show is recorded Friday morning, March 13th, 2020. The Revenue Estimating Conference forecasts how much revenue the state will receive. This is how the governor and the legislature determine their budget. The conference is required to meet a minimum of 3 times a year.
Now, you may recall that the governor was required to submit her budget based on the December estimate.
Dave Roeder is one of the 3 panelists on the REC. Each panelist makes an economic forecast. Then at these meetings, the 3 make final recommendations.
The legislature is to use the lower estimate of either December or March. So if the March estimate is lower than December, the legislature must rely on the March estimate.
This is one of the reasons why the House and Senate wait until the second half of the session to roll out their budget.
Today we're going to update the estimates for FY20, which started July 1st, 2019 and ends June 30 of 2020.
As far as finishing this fiscal year, which ends in June, REC panelist David Underwood says,
I guess I'm very optimistic that our numbers, whether they were the previous numbers or the new numbers for the current fiscal year, are pretty solid.
The REC forecasts fiscal year 2020 will have $76 million more than its earlier prediction. But looking at fiscal year 2021...
Well, quite a bit has happened since we met in December, and much of the news is not good.
Holly Lyons is the 3rd member of this panel.
The recent news related to the announced COVID-19 pandemic, combined with the plummeting stock market prices, oil prices, and interest rates, cannot be ignored.
Lyons says Iowa has a stable yet slowly growing economy and is in a sound financial position. Also, the United States is in the longest economic expansion in history that started in 2009. But Lyons says at some point it will turn down.
It is possible that the latest world and financial market events signal the end of an expansion. Yes, it's possible, but with all recessions, we don't really know we're in one until six or more months after the downturn. I might note that no common economic data has been released since the onslaught of the bad news late in February. So it's like we're chugging up the hill slowly, but we're in a dense rolling cloud bank and we can't really see if we'll keep slowly climbing or if we'll start heading down the other side of the peak. And there's a lot of fear and uncertainty about the pandemic, about global relations and oil, about the stock market, all rolling around in those clouds, causing volatile markets, driving interest rates down, and pretty much paralyzing investors, which isn't good for business or consumers.
Previously, the REC estimate for fiscal year 2021 was 2.9% growth.
I wish I could suggest a good number for adjusting for COVID-19.
David Underwood says if the pandemic affects the economy,
our numbers are going to be too high, for at least for fiscal year 21. I would love to be able to give a good estimate of what that might be, but I can't.
The REC revises the growth for 2021 to 1.8%. Because it added $76 million to this fiscal year, this change means 2021 will have $12 million less than the REC previously stated. Dave Roeder says obviously it would be great to know what the final outcome of the coronavirus will be on the economy, but they have to make a prediction with what they know today.
We try to base it on the facts that we know, not on the facts that could have, should have, or how people may react or may not react. Because if we did that, we would never end our meeting. Because there's something that is always out there that changes.
Holly Lyons says before this week, she didn't think she would be worried about a pandemic.
So much has changed just in that 1 week time. Even last night, as I was working on my remarks, you know, the futures market crashed again. So it's just going to take some time to let this work through. And unfortunately, it's fueled by fear and panic. And I think that's what we want to say here is there is no panic. Yes, there's fear, but there is no need to panic at this time. It's just unprecedented times, and we do the best we can do. And speaking for myself, I'm happy to meet any time we need to revisit this.
Lyons says maybe in a month there will be more clarity. The REC is only required to meet 3 times, and its next scheduled meeting is in October. After this meeting, Dave Roeder says they could meet sooner if there are significant changes in the economy. He says a downturn usually starts with a decline of sales tax revenue.
Because it would depend on whether or not people just started spending less, because depending on, if you're feeling comfortable about things, you go ahead and spend. If you're not, then you kind of hold back. So we're really into some uncharted territory.
This revenue forecast now allows the appropriations committees to finish their 2021 budget. The chair of the House committee, Republican Representative Gary Moore, says he feels good about what he's hearing.
Conservative budgeting principles have paid off. They've lowered the estimate for next year, but all of our savings accounts are full. And we feel very good about where we are right now.
Democratic Representative Chris Hall is the ranking member in the House Appropriations Committee. Hall says one thing the state should consider is how to fund public health concerning the coronavirus.
We need, as legislators, to consider whether that would come from an ending balance, whether that's coming from a specific appropriation or fund that is created to help address these issues. So the costs to the state are one of the first things that we need to be considering.
Earlier in the week, Governor Kim Reynolds held a press conference addressing coronavirus in Iowa.
The reality is COVID-19 is now here, and we can expect the number of tests and the number of positive cases will continue to increase in the days to come. While this news is concerning, it's not cause for alarm. I want to assure Iowans that we are prepared and we are taking additional steps to ensure access to resources to effectively manage the situation.
Governor Reynolds says there are emergency funds available if necessary. Earlier this week, she signed a proclamation of disaster emergency. It authorizes state agencies to use personnel, equipment, and facilities to prevent, contain, and mitigate the effect of the virus. Governor Reynolds also says she's requested federal funding.
In our request, they asked that each of the states put in what they thought would be the potential cost. I think we submitted about $200 million was the cost that we sent to the federal government as they were trying to put, to figure out what the overall cost would be.
Reynolds says federal funding should be available in April. In terms of testing for the COVID-19 virus, Iowa started with materials to test 500 people, and that number is dwindling to around 300 as more tests are conducted. Governor Reynolds says the federal government will help expand the testing.
So they're continuing to increase the number of test kits that are being allocated across the state. And then I think as commercial testing is able to be brought on board, then that's also going to alleviate some of the concerns. So right now I have no concerns with the number of tests.
As of Friday morning, March 13th, the governor is not pausing the legislative session or restricting public access to the Capitol over coronavirus concerns. As of Thursday afternoon, March 12th, Republican Senate Majority Leader Jack Whitfer says he's not calling for a change either and is taking cues from the Department of Public Health and the governor.
Well, I would just urge all the public to make the best decision when deciding whether they need to come to the Capitol or want to come to the Capitol. To this point, the Capitol is still open to the public, and until something changes and the conversation with the governor and DPH changes, I don't see that being affected.
The spread of infection of the known cases in Iowa has not happened due to a community spread.
Once it goes to community spread, meaning you don't know where you got it, it's just spreading throughout the community, that certainly creates a different conversation. And until that happens, I don't see any changes at this time. But again, we're working with DPH. They're the ones that are the experts in this field. I'm not a doctor. We're trying to work with the experts to make the best decisions possible.
On Thursday afternoon, Republican Speaker of the House Pat Grassley also says his plans for the following week is business as usual at the Capitol.
Obviously, we need to be mindful of the steps that the Department of Public Health has laid out, not just for everyone that's going to be coming into contact with other people. We'll continue to do that. As the situation changes, we'll continue to have contact with the Department of the Governor's Office and the Senate and then make those decisions accordingly.
Nationally, there have been many cancellations, like sporting events. All of Michigan's K-12 schools are canceled until April. In Iowa, the 3 Regent universities are moving to an online classroom delivery, and the Des Moines K-12 public schools have canceled classes for the rest of the month. When Representative Grassley is asked if it is better to cancel or restrict activities at the Capitol to be safer than sorry.
So better than safe than sorry. So that would just, then we would just shut everything down in reaction to something that we don't have the evidence to do. I don't agree with that assessment. We need to be prepared to change, or we need to be able to prepare to make changes, especially if you're just talking about on this complex. We're preparing ourselves. If that would need to happen, we will react appropriately. We're not going to ignore this situation. But again, I have to rely on what we're being told by Department of Public Health. So that way, they're the professionals, and I'm not going to just say, well, because I think that this could happen. It may lead to that. I'm not saying it isn't. But we need to be prepared to react, and I think we are.
So has that threshold been determined of what would cause, you know, changes in activity?
In our conversations, I don't know if I remember off the top of my head what that is in the conversations. What's the term? The community spread. I don't remember. Yeah, the community spread. I think that those have been established from the standpoint, or they're being talked about with the Department of Public Health. So obviously we're going to follow those guidelines that they would lay out. But at this point in time, that has not been brought to our attention as something where we've reached that threshold.
That question came from Des Moines Register reporter Stephen Gruber Miller. As of recording this podcast on the morning of March 13th, 2020, there are 16 people with coronavirus in Iowa. Most were infected while on an international cruise ship. This is the Legislative Podcast Under the Golden Dome. I'm John Pimble.
If you value knowing what's going on in your state, share this podcast with your friends. Make sure to tag Iowa Public Radio on social media and use the hashtag UTGDPod.
Under the Golden Dome is supported by the Iowa Bankers Association and by Cultivating Compassion, the Dr. Richard Deming Foundation, fostering causes that enrich the community, generate understanding, and cultivate compassion, including above and beyond cancer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House File 2589 is the bill we bring, seems to come up every couple of years. It's our medical cannabidiol program updates.
The 2017 Medical Cannabidiol Act established a program for pills and creams to be available to qualifying patients that have a limited amount of THC from marijuana plants. Last year, the House and Senate overwhelmingly passed a bill that would add additional conditions and increase the potency of THC from 3% to 25 grams in a 90-day period, but the governor vetoed the bill. Republican Representative Jared Klein floor manages a new bill to make some changes to the program.
This bill is going to cap THC at 4.5 grams for 90 days with some exceptions. Additionally, we're going to have new healthcare practitioners that are approved to recommend this product and qualifying conditions expanded, protections for employers added, and processes are improved throughout the program. So to get into more detail, on the term we have currently of untreatable pain, we are going to change that to chronic pain. That is a direct request from the board that lines us up with more current medical terminology.
The Medical Cannabidiol Board makes recommendations about the quantity, medical uses, and medical conditions for use of the product. They recommend 4.5 grams of THC in a 90-day period. This bill would allow for more if a healthcare practitioner determines the patient's condition is terminal. It also allows a doctor to increase the amount to what they think is right to treat a patient's debilitating medical condition. Representative Klein names other conditions to be added.
Severe intractable autism with self-injurious or aggressive behaviors and post-traumatic stress disorder. These are two recommendations from the Cannabidiol Board that we add to the qualifying conditions. They did their homework, they did their research, and they did exactly what we expect and asked of them, provided us with this recommendation, of which I suggest we follow.
While Democrats support the program, they make a case for higher doses. Democratic Representative Bob Kresig says instead of 4.5 grams, why not do something closer that is a bit less than was passed but vetoed last year?
Remember, what did we do last year? We did 25 grams over 90 days. I think there were only four no votes in this chamber. We're saying 15 grams, 90 days, will give people an opportunity to actually have access to a reasonable dose that helps them deal with their pain.
Democratic Representative John Forbes, who is a pharmacist, says the new changes would lower the amount of THC in a 90-day period for some patients presently in the system.
I have a patient, in my pharmacy, I've been recommending my patients to go and get the letter of recommendation from their doctor and try using medical cannabis. I have one female patient who was on oxycodone, about 100 milligrams a day. She switched over to the medical cannabis program. She's now completely off all of her opioids and now maintained on medical cannabis. She tells me, and she's at a higher dose than 50 milligrams per day. She tells me if we pass this legislation, she will stop using medical cannabis and go back on her opioids. Is that the message we want to send to people here in the state of Iowa? That we are actually promoting people to go off the program and go back on opioid medications.
Democratic Representative Wes Breckenridge encourages this bill not to go forward, but he does give it credit.
There are items within this bill that are very good items within the bill, but this bill still has work that needs done to it. I would like to see us vote this bill down, continue to have conversations with the Senate where they know they have a piece of legislation that has the additional dosage amounts, and continue that conversation with the senators over there and see if we can come up with a compromise on this piece of legislation.
During his closing remarks, Representative Jared Klein argues if medical cannabis is to expand in Iowa, the legislature has to listen to the Medical Cannabidiol Board. He says no one in the House of Representatives is a doctor, but there are doctors on the board.
Not only is this gentleman a physician, he's also a pharmacist on the board. That quote I read to you earlier about 4.5 being maybe a little further, but still within the scope of not causing harm, that came from Dr. Stephen Richards, a pharmacist and a physician. You don't get those degrees easy, and I'm going to trust his opinion because I'm neither of those. He's both. So the board is doing their job. We appreciate it. We're listening. That's the key I have to say there to the board. We're listening, and I trust you. And we trust you further.
This bill passes the Iowa House of Representatives 52-48. THC is a Schedule I drug, according to the United States Drug Enforcement Agency. Federal law prohibits the use of any form of marijuana for medical treatment. However, there are 33 states that do, and 11 of them allow the marijuana to be used recreationally. This is the legislative podcast, Under the Golden Dome. I'm John Pemble.
A good civics lesson teaches you how to be an engaged citizen, and listening to Under the Golden Dome helps you be an engaged Iowan. When you become a member of Iowa Public Radio, you support coverage that keeps you engaged and informed. Give now at iowapublicradio.org/donate. It takes just a few minutes to make a powerful impact.
Under the Golden Dome is supported by Cultivating Compassion, the Dr. Richard Deming Foundation, and by the Iowa Bankers Association. Helping Iowans reach their financial goals is what Iowa banks are all about. Discover the genuine difference of Iowa banks by following Iowa Bankers on Facebook and Twitter.
Asbestos is a material made of long, thin mineral fibers. Some of the fibers are microscopic, and when inhaled, it can cause mesothelioma, which leads to cancer of the lungs. For most of the 20th century, asbestos was widely used to make insulation, drywall, and roofing. By the 1970s, the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission began to ban asbestos, but because its use was so widespread, people have been exposed to it. There have been many lawsuits over asbestos exposure, both individual and class action. A bill comes to the House chamber to add more requirements when filing an asbestos lawsuit. It is floor managed by Republican Representative Brian Losey.
The intent of the bill is to address the issue of overnaming of defendants in asbestos claims. In some cases, a plaintiff's attorney will name defendants with the slightest connection to the plaintiff. This is done for a plethora of reasons, most legitimate, some not. The overnaming of defendants can lead to the litigation moving more slowly and ineffectively for the plaintiff as defendants file motions to be dismissed.
Democratic Representative Brian Meyer files an amendment that would exempt new requirements in the bill from someone exposed to asbestos during their military service.
In the bill, it requires that if you are going to make this claim for mesothelioma, that you list with specificity every single name, address, occupation, current and past work site you've ever worked on.
Meyer says having to prove every place you've ever worked is a burden.
And I would suggest to this body, if you are in the military, A, you don't have a choice. And B, that you don't know sometimes exactly where you were on such and such a date and what work site you were. Guess what the military does? It moves around.
The amendment fails. Representative Karen Derry served on the subcommittee for this bill and says she has serious concerns about it.
Iowa law already requires plaintiffs in an asbestos action to include in their petition a great deal of specificity, including the specific location and manner of each alleged exposure.
Derry says the cancer caused by asbestos exposure can take many years to develop.
The specific location and manner of each exposure. The beginning and ending dates of each exposure, including the frequency of the exposure. Exposure that likely occurred 20, 50, 60 years ago. I cannot support a law that puts up more obstacles to Iowans seeking justice after they've been exposed to asbestos. It would be unfair to do so. Additionally, this bill strikes me as a solution in search of a problem. In recent years, there have been a handful of asbestos claims filed in state court. The vast majority of these cases land in federal court in the multi-district litigation.
Floor manager Brian Losey says this bill is necessary and shares an example from the mid-1990s after he graduated law school and began working for a law firm in Illinois.
We had a client come in, diagnosed with mesothelioma. We didn't really know what we were doing, so we contacted a Chicago attorney, Chicago law firm, to help us guide us. They sent us a form complaint. Said, fill in the blanks, file it in federal court. And there you go. And then let the games begin, essentially. And that's the kind of attitude, unfortunately, that a lot of mesothelioma, asbestos-related, large, oftentimes national law firms bring. And that's one of the reasons that we have this problem today of overnaming.
Losey says the current system has the potential to cause too much delay.
If we overname too many, the plaintiff is actually will have to sit through longer periods of discovery, sit through longer depositions. If we don't name all of the defendants that have a connection, if we only lead them to service locations as the amendment wanted to do, that could delay their recovery, could delay discovery, could cause problems with respect to statute of limitations.
This bill passes the House. It has already passed the Senate and can now be signed by the governor. If it becomes a law, it will begin on July 1st. The Iowa House overwhelmingly passed five bills aimed at addressing the state's shortage of child care. The bills make adjustments to the state's child care assistance program and creates tax credits and grants aimed at increasing the workforce and number of child care slots. Several Democrats questioned if some of the legislation goes far enough to address workforce shortages and increase provider reimbursement rates. The bills are now eligible to go before the Senate. This is the ninth weekly podcast episode of Under the Golden Dome for 2020. Special thanks to our Statehouse reporter, Katerina Sestarik. Also thanks to Natalie Krebs. Both provided material for this week's show. The script editor is news director Michael Leland. Support also comes from our digital team, Lindsay Moon and Matt Siren. Also thanks to Radio Iowa's Kay Henderson for advice. Share this podcast in your social media feed. Find the Iowa Public Radio Twitter account and retweet or write your own post. Use the hashtag UTGDPod. I'm John Pimble. Under the Golden Dome is a production of Iowa Public Radio.